Welcome to Farmscape Online. I'm Bruce Cochran. My guest is Dr. Megan Niederwerter, the Executive Director of the Swine Health Information Center. Thanks for joining us, Dr. Niederwerter.
Thanks for having me, Bruce.
Swine Health Information Center is represented at World Pork Expo. What's the significance of this annual event and what opportunities does it provide chick and pork producers?
Yeah, it's really one of those events where pork producers come together with allied industry and national organizations such as the Swine Health Information Center to not only share information and resources, but to learn about what's going on in the industry, what are new tools, new technologies, educational events to try and keep producers and veterinarians up to speed on any new, of course, health or disease issues in the industry. And it really is an opportunity to connect and, again, have those relationships where you can share information on a day-to-day basis.
It's been announced that New World screwworm has been confirmed in Texas. What are the implications of this new development?
Yes, so yesterday was the first detection of New World screwworm in the U.S. in a three-week-old calf. The larvae were identified in the umbilicus of this calf. The calf was in Texas, really close to the U.S.-Mexico border. And again, the first case that has been detected with regards to this infestation. It appears to be an isolated event. There are no additional cases that have been detected at this time, and it's certainly something we want to keep an eye on. Before this detection in the U.S., the closest case was detected several days ago. It was in 25 miles away from the Texas border. It was in Mexico, and it was in a goat. And so we were notified of that, and of course notified of the single detection in the U.S. yesterday. One of the things as we think about this pest, we want to remind producers about what this would look like on the animal. And so the New World screwworm is a parasitic fly. It's one where the infestation only comes from the fly. So there's no animal-to-animal transmission. There's no human-to-human transmission. There's no animal-to-human transmission. The parasitic fly can infest any warm-blooded animal. So this can be cattle. This can be sheep. Goats, swine, dogs and cats, and then in rare cases it can be humans. And so as we think about this, we want to ensure that the messaging is clear that this is not a food safety concern. Pork maintains safe to consume for or the public. Also beef, of course, is safe to consume, not a food safety concern. But we also need to maintain vigilance. And one of the aspects of that is knowing what the fly and the infestation looks like on farm. So the fly needs a wound. It can be a very small wound, as small as a tick bite or an injection site. And then the fly will land and deposit its eggs into the wound. The eggs then create larvae, and the larvae can ingest any live tissue. So imagine a wound that becomes deeper, doesn't heal normally, starts to have a smell to it because of the contamination. The animal may seem irritated, may lick at the wound, may head shake, may eventually become depressed, off feed. These are all things that we want to keep a really close eye on, our animals. And then also think about what are the practices that may create wounds in production. So for cattle, you can think about branding and castration. For swine, you can think about castration. You can think about ear tags, ear notching, tail docking. All of these practices can create a potential wound that we want to keep an eye on to ensure that those wounds are healing normally. Those kinds of things become really important at the producer and slat level. Also ensuring awareness from your animal caretakers. This is a disease, again, that is in far south Texas in a single calf, but it's never too early to enhance awareness, vigilance, inspect your animals for potential wounds, inspect your animals for any clinical signs that may be out of the ordinary. And again, if there's any suspected cases, you want to ensure that you're reporting that to any state or federal animal health official.
Who is involved in the response? And in what roles?
Yeah, USDA APHIS has really taken a proactive approach on this. The primary tool that we have to eradicate New World screwworm flies is the sterile insect technique. And the reason that that works is that New World screwworm flies only mate once. So if a sterilized male fly mates with a female, it ends the reproductive cycle. And so the USDA APHIS approach has been to release as many sterile flies in the areas of New World screwworm emergence to try and stop the reproductive cycle and stop the spread. That continues to be a big role for USDA APHIS and the response there. They also have created a 20-kilometer infestation zone around the single detection. That puts in movement restrictions, quarantine, and enhanced surveillance to ensure that that single detection does not spread and there's no movement of the fly. And so those are really important protocols. The other aspect of that is continued vigilance along the border, thinking about surveillance in wildlife, stop movement of livestock across the border that's been in place for over a year, continued sterile fly insect release around the border so that the fly can be pushed back and into southern Mexico and, of course, through Central America. We want to be as aggressive as possible to eliminate the pest and prevent spread.
What are the prospects of eradication?
Yeah, I think that the USDA APHIS approach for a New World screwworm response plan, that they've been working on that for really over a year, that since the first detection in Mexico, which was November of 2024, and having that really proactive response. Part of that is also increasing our capacity to produce additional sterile flies. So right now the primary production facility is in Panama, and there have been efforts to not only have a production facility in Mexico, but also right here in the U.S. So in Texas, there is current construction on a sterile fly insect production facility. That's really going to enhance the capacity to release sterile flies at a higher volume, which will allow additional areas to be covered. And one of the aspects about increasing the capacity for sterile flies is increasing the volume that's released, also enhancing the area that the sterile flies can cover, and that really impacts our ability to stop the reproductive cycle on the wild type fly and prevent spread.
Anything to add on New World screwworm?
I think maintaining producer vigilance, thinking about non-healing wounds, keeping an eye, inspecting your animals on a daily basis, really, really important. The other thing as we think about this is that it's so important to consider global disease monitoring. We are very connected from a global perspective. And, of course, Mexico, as our southern border, is very connected to the U.S. So continuing to monitor not only what's going on in Mexico, but in other countries, thinking about how that could impact animal health in the U.S., that is certainly a big effort for the Swine Health Information Center. How do we monitor swine diseases to enhance awareness, proactive response, preparedness, and protect the health of the U.S. swine herd?
We have seen new developments related to foot and mouth disease. What's happening on that front, and how is that being addressed globally?
Yeah, there's two really important things that are going on with foot and mouth disease virus right now. One of them is that the SAT1 serotype, SAT stands for Southern African Territories. This is a serotype that historically has only been in Southern Africa until recent years. This has really expanded substantially in recent months and years. And so as we think about that SAT1 serotype, it's really important to remind listeners that FMD serotypes are not cross-protective, meaning if an animal is exposed to serotype O, they would not be protected against SAT1 as a serotype. And that goes for all 7 serotypes of FMD. And so you got to think about that not only for exposure to the virus itself, but the vaccine protection. The vaccine protection has to be specific to the serotype. So this SAT1 over the last several months and years has increased with regards to geographic expansion. We've seen that the virus has been detected in Northern Africa. We've seen it in the Middle East, the Near East, and most recently in the EU and in Asia. So there are currently SAT1 FMD serotype outbreaks in Greece, in Cyprus, in Mongolia, and in China. This is significant because the animals that may be endemic for foot and mouth disease virus or naive do not have any underlying protection against the SAT1. So they start showing clinical signs. The other aspect is, how do we control this SAT1 serotype? There's been a change. Either it's more transmissible, or it's being carried by animal movements, or potentially contributed to enhanced spread by some reason. When a virus expands its geographic range, we have to consider how the risk changes, not only to the countries affected, but naive countries, negative countries like the U.S. We have not had a case of foot and mouth disease virus since 1929. We want to do everything we can to prevent introduction. Foot and mouth disease virus is one that can affect hoof stock, and so we have to think about cattle and swine, and we have to think about how we prepare for this potential increased risk, not only for SAT1, but any FMD serotype. And the reason that it's important specifically in the U.S., not only to maintain negativity, but because we have Seneca virus A, which is an endemic disease in the U.S. that affects hogs and causes vesicular lesions. And so every time we see vesicular lesions in one of our hogs, we have to rule out foot and mouth disease virus. This again goes back to that vigilance, not having any complacency with vesicular lesions. Because if you look at a vesicular lesion on the hoof or in the mouth, you cannot tell the difference between Seneca virus A and foot and mouth disease virus. You have to do diagnostics. So it's really important not only to know what's circulating globally, but ensure vigilance on farm as we see those vesicular lesions.
Anything to add on foot and mouth disease?
I think continuing to stay up to date is really important, and the Swine Health Information Center releases our global disease monitoring report at the first week of every month. FMD is commonly on there, so we want to keep an eye on what are the outbreaks doing, are they in pig farms, is there a vaccine protocol, what has been the response to countries that have had the introduction, and all that information can be found on our website, swinehealth.org.
And we are seeing an expansion of African swine fever as well. How concerning is that and why?
Yeah, what we've seen with African swine fever virus recently is that it maintains an endemic status in the Dominican Republic and Haiti. And from a proximity standpoint to North America, that is certainly concerning. We have to continue to think about vigilance at the border, prevention of any introduction of pork products that come from countries that are dealing with ASF, as that's really one of our big risk factors. The other global monitoring has really been on Spain. So Spain is a massive exporter of pork in the EU. It's the number one exporter. It's also a big exporter of pork globally. And so as we think about Spain and the recent introduction of ASF in Spain, we got to think about lessons learned, how they responded, what can we, again, translate from their experience to understand risks and also success strategies. And so Spain specifically has had an introduction of ASF in November of 2025, so about 7 months they've been dealing with the outbreak. ASF was introduced through their wild boar population. The first case was in wild boar. They continue to have cases in wild boar. It's about 325 cases of wild boar that they've had over the last 7 months. The success story there is that they have had no introductions into their domestic pig population. All of the wild boar have been detected in the area of Catalonia near Barcelona. and the wild boar have been fairly isolated to that region in Spain. But the concerning aspect is that is a massive pork production area in the country. And so they've been really aggressive as far as trying to prevent introduction into domestic pigs. So that includes fencing around domestic pig populations, farms, very aggressive hunting and trapping of the wild boar to try and reduce exposure. And as we look at their response, again, success in preventing it from the domestic pig population, but continued outbreak in European wild boar, we have to remind ourselves that we too have a risk of feral swine. And the wild swine, domestic swine interface continues to be one of the largest risk factors for disease introduction. And again, preventing that direct contact between wild and domestic swine is really important.
There are efforts to address the wild boar, the wild pig situation in the U.S. What's happening on that front?
Yeah, so the largest feral swine populations are in the southern states, so Texas and the southeast states. There have been significant efforts to reduce those populations, reduce production losses from agricultural, not only, of course, the risk to swine, but crops as well. And so really Wildlife Services from USDA has had a really proactive approach to try and reduce populations and reduce production losses. But we have to think about feral swine as a continued reservoir for potential diseases, pseudorabies, swine brucellosis. We want to ensure that there are no contacts between feral swine and domestic swine to protect the commercial swine health.
Is eradication conceivable in the United States of feral swine?
You know, I think we have to continue to pursue efforts towards reducing those populations because of the risk to our livestock species, the health of swine, and our pork producers, the livelihood that depends on the health of swine. And so as we think about one of the efforts that continues to contribute to that, reducing feral swine population and reducing the risk of that population has to be on the list.
What's at stake for pork producers in North America?
Yeah, so when we think about what's gone on globally, we have to look at other countries where the feral or wild boar populations continue to maintain diseases that have been eradicated in the domestic or commercial populations. So you can imagine as a wild species, it is more difficult for disease control efforts. And the risks continue in those populations. So we've talked about ASF in Spain, but also that's been a common theme throughout the EU. When the ASF virus gets into the wild boar population, it is more difficult to eradicate from the entire country, even without domestic pigs being infected. And so, again, that continues to be a risk factor for swine diseases. And we got to maintain vigilance about eliminating that contact between domestic and feral swine.
And is there anything you would like to add?
You can find these resources on our website, swinehealth.org, and our monthly newsletter.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Bruce.
Our guest has been Dr. Megan Niederwerder, the Executive Director of the Swine Health Information Center. At World Pork Expo 2026 in Des Moines, for Farmscape Online, I'm Bruce Cochran.